And we're now at the pinnacle of two massive discoveries, one being potentially at Committee Bay and the other one down being at Sombrero. You know, looking at Sombrero pre-drilling, we're comparing it as an analog to a mine called Las Bambas. Las Bambas is about equivalent of 50 million ounces of gold or $60 billion of metal. It's copper moly, we're copper gold, and that's obviously a better factor for us, but the scale of what we're exploring there, it rivals the Las Bambas deposit in size. And the more we look, the more layers of data we take, the more confidence we have that we might be onto a big system like that. And it's never been drilled before. The evidence is really, really strong, and we're continually signing CAs on it, something I haven't talked too much about. But several of the major mining companies around the world have come to us to sign confidentiality agreements so they could get a really close look at this before we start drilling it later this summer.
Welcome back, and thanks for tuning in to another Mining Stock Education episode. I'm Bill Powers, your host. Well, joining me today is Ivan Bebek, Executive Chairman of Orin Resources. I'm proud to announce that Orin is a new Mining Stock Education sponsor, and I'm looking forward to providing coverage and updates on Orin's progress over the course of this year. Orin is currently looking at numerous potential catalysts in 2019, so this is a story that you'll definitely want to pay attention to. Orin trades on the TSX and the NYSE American under the ticker AUG. Fully diluted, the company has under 97 million shares out with a current market cap of a little under US 100 million. So with that being said, Ivan, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to be here.
Ivan, as you know, we were able to meet in person at Mines and Money Toronto last October, and we talked. It was supposed to be for 25 minutes. We ended up speaking for an hour and 15 minutes. And during the course of that conversation, we talked about one of your key projects, Sombrero, and you really got me excited by just the confidence and the belief that you're onto something world-class here. You've already built and sold two successful mining companies. I'd like to start off with you sharing regarding the anatomy of making a world-class discovery. What does it take? You've done it twice, but this one seems to be even bigger with Orin right now. What does it take to put together a team that can really pursue a world-class discovery?
Yeah, well, thank you very much for having me on here. And it was nice to meet you back in Toronto. So the anatomy of a team, I mean, it sounds easy once it's done, but it's actually not. We've been working together as a group for 13 years, my partner, Sean Wallace, and myself. We started Keegan. We found 5 million ounces of gold in Ghana, West Africa. That's a producing 10 million ounce gold mine. We did that with a really small team, and we did that as our inaugural company to prove ourselves. We evolved as we went along, as you would. And I would say the main ingredient of creating a great team is success. And so finding 5 million ounces of gold was the first success. We then poured into another exploration opportunity, and we tried to improve on what we did with Keegan and expand that team. And that's what we came up with Caden, where we sold it to Agnico Eagle for $205 million in 2014. Both share prices performed extremely well for shareholders. The first company went from 49 cents to $9 per share. The second one went from 67 cents a year before the takeout to a 350 takeout share price, which doubled if you held shares of Agnico for 14 months later. So not only did we attract a lot of these really high quality geologists, Dan McCoy, who was our key geologist that brought us into Keegan and Caden's assets, he's the gentleman who recruited these Newmont gentlemen, Michael Henriksen and Dave Smithson, who are leading the charge for Orin. So we had technical success. We impressed our own geologists with our financial capabilities, and then we had market success, which gave us the ability to raise a lot of money, which being over $600 million since 2005 in combined good and bad markets, which is a fairly impressive number if you follow the last decade of mining stocks and whatnot. So that comes down to how we came together with Orin and how this anatomy of going after these major world-class discovery exists. And this is where we took it. The gentleman, Dave Smithson and Michael Henriksen, both from Newmont. Michael Henriksen was a former structural geologist. Dave was a former global mapper. They were imperative on the Caden sale with Caden. These gentlemen brought a bunch of world experts from Newmont, including the former chief geologist of Newmont, Antonio Rivas, who's on our board. Antonio was also the VP of geosciences for BHP, a $140 billion base metal company today. Anyway, these guys brought in some of these world experts, about six in particular. They all have different expertise, different backgrounds. So it's not one geologist that's doing every element of the science. It's each guy has done his own science as an expert, and they worked together as a team. They found several million ounces for Newmont. They were imperative in our success in Caden. And when we assembled Orin, we went out and said, hey guys, you know, we want to do something bigger than we've done before. 5 million ounces is great. It made people a lot of money, but we want to have a 10, 20 million ounce discovery or two on our belt. And let's go shopping. Let's go do this. We have a lot of wind behind our back from Caden. We've made a lot of people money. Our ability to raise money is incredible. And then we went out and we built a 7-project portfolio in Orin. So first major part of the anatomy is technical team. We earned that through our successes of our first two companies. Second major part is the portfolio project. And if you remember 2014, when we put Orin together and started to assemble the company, we went out and acquired stuff that was worth pennies on the dollar. We bought Committee Bay for $18 million. It cost us 13 million shares. That company used to trade at a $200 million valuation as North Country Gold in the last bull market. So these are the kind of asset buys we were doing. And we were buying major district opportunities, you know, large scale. That's a 300-kilometer long gold belt. And then in that process, we met a guy named Miguel Cardozo. Miguel Cardozo is part of our team. He runs our Peruvian operations. Miguel's credited with the discovery of Yanacocha as a gold deposit when he worked with Newmont in Peru. That's a 60 million ounce epithermal discovery in Peru that he made, or he led the charge of. So this is kind of the people we got to work with. This is kind of the outlook we went and took on. And what we joked internally about, or not joked, but we described ourselves intelligently as a junior exploration company with a majors exploration team and a major's exploration appetite. And so fast forward a few years, we've obviously raised quite a bit of money for Orin, about $100 million to date. Along that path, we met Goldcorp, and Goldcorp recognized the scale of some of these gold projects and copper gold now with Sombrero coming online. And they came in and gave us $36 million, which was the largest investment by a major into a junior in the entire market in this, I think in the last 20 years, as a initial investment. So, you know, that was a tremendous validation to what we've assembled. And we're now at the pinnacle of two massive discoveries, one being potentially at Committee Bay and the other one down being at Sombrero. And the way I've been describing this for the investing audience is, I believe as an investor and as an executive with bias, because it's our company, but you know, I'm still looking for something on the planet that rivals the exploration potential both in Sombrero and Committee Bay, and I have not found it yet. So I think categorically, these are two of the biggest exploration swings you can take as an investor, as an executive right now in the business.
So you've been in this business for 20 years. Would you say that Sombrero ranks right at the top?
I'd say by far. I've seen things as an investor. I got to be a shareholder in Aurelian. That was a tremendous discovery in Ecuador. I was a shareholder in Redback Mining, which was the discovery of Mauritania, the 30 million ounce deposit in over in Africa as well, where in Mauritania actually was just called Tasiat, but it was in Mauritania. And, you know, looking at Sombrero pre-drilling, we're comparing it as an analog, and the video on our website does a very good job of doing that, to a mine called Las Bambas. Las Bambas is about equivalent of 50 million ounces of gold or $60 billion of metal. It's copper moly, we're copper gold, and that's obviously a better factor for us. But the scale of what we're exploring there, it rivals the Las Bambas deposit in size. And the more we look and the more layers of data we take, the more confidence we have that we might be onto a big system like that. And it's never been drilled before. The evidence is really, really strong, and we're continually signing CAs on it, something I haven't talked too much about, but several of the major mining companies around the world have come to us to sign confidentiality agreements so they could get a really close look at this before we start drilling it later this summer.
You know, an astute investor is going to listen to us talk about the potential, and they might ask themselves, well, if the potential's so great, how did MMG or BHP and some others in the region miss this opportunity? And what would be your response to such an investor?
Well, my response would be the facts. I think about six different major companies, including the ones you've mentioned, have walked on this property before and have taken a look. The first miss, and everyone's recognizing this across that crowd because all of them have come back to sign CAs, and there's obviously dialogue about why they missed it. The government actually mapped the volcanic rocks, which cover most of the outcropping mineralization is covered by volcanic rocks. It was mapped at a very young age that a lot of people didn't believe would host the deposits next door. People were in a box in this part of Peru. There's not just Las Bambas, there's about five major copper moly porphyries next door within 50 to 200 kilometers away, this major belt. We believe this is the extension of the belt. We believe it was missed because there's volcanic rocks that cover a lot of the potential mineralization. People thought it was young. We're the first ever people to pull trenches on Sombrero. We got to pull back the quaternary cover, we got to pull back the gravels, and we got to sample, you know, one of those trenches ran 109 meters of 0.7% copper gold equivalent. That trench had gaps in it, and we just gave ourselves zero in that calculation because we couldn't sample the whole entire trench. But part of the trench ran 30 meters of 1.93% copper, which is spectacular. What's even more impressive about that is that we're trenching in the world of copper gold porphyries, high grade copper gold over 100 plus meters widths. And that's truly spectacular. So the guys like, you know, possibly MMG or BHP or any of the others that have missed this, had they seen these trenches that we've been pulling, you know, we've got another 150 meters, 0.5% copper gold in another area. You know, we've got gold grades on surface up to 193 grams per ton. We have copper up to 16%. You know, there's a tremendous metal budget here. There's plus 100 meter widths of really, really high grade copper and gold being sampled by us. You know, nobody would have ignored any of this. And that's why everyone's come to sign CAs. And, you know, the crowd has definitely shifted. And our geologist said, we went outside the box, you know, and I'm going to quote, you know, Dave Smithson here, actually, his comment was, we first came here and nobody liked it because they saw gold, but they were looking for copper. And, you know, we saw a hillside on our second visit called Good Lucky. You could see on our website, or in our presentation, a beautiful section of a hill where a river cut a canyon. And you could see mining adits in the side of the hill where they were mining high-grade copper halfway down a 400-meter-foot cliff. And then we went down to the bottom. We see bornite, which is high-grade copper, you know, into huge metal for high-grade copper, if you know the copper world. But people were looking for copper, and they were focusing on this project, considering it to possibly be a gold-rich project. And obviously that changed dramatically for us. And it's been basically every visit we've done on the property since, things have gotten better. We found more outcropping mineralization. We found sampled more high grade and a lot of other elements that are really giving us a strong indication this could be a major copper gold system.
And after you discovered a lot of these excellent surface results, then you massively increased your land package. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so we started with about 5,000 hectares. We got the project from Miguel Cardozo, the gentleman who found Yanacocha as a gold deposit. And we quickly got excited about it because we found copper and gold on the edges of our property boundary. So we did what any smart, intelligent, aggressive junior would do, and we started staking ground all around us. And we got to about a 20,000 or 40,000 hectare land position through the staking. And then our guys, Michael Henriksen and Dave Smithson, you know, they turned and said, hey, guys, you know, we have this very special way of sampling streams at the bottom of canyons to determine if there's gold or copper or other metals running off the rocks that are predominantly covered. Can we go screen 8,000 square kilometers? And, you know, jaw drops at first, 8,000 square kilometers. That's a lot of screening. How much is this going to cost? It costs us about $700,000 US to do this. Obviously, we were well-financed when we chose to do this. And then we increased our land position to 120,000 hectares. And, you know, we did this for two reasons. One, first and foremost, because if we got Sombrero right, and if this belt continues that hosts some of the world's largest copper porphyry deposits, we want to have as much of that as possible, right? And the second reason why we did it was we knew when we got on Sombrero, everyone's going to come if we start pulling 100 meter plus trenches of mineralization, which is exactly what's happened as of now. So we wanted to be first. We wanted to be greedy, and we wanted to have the potential, not for one Las Bambas or Tintaya, some of the mines next door. We wanted multiple of those type of discoveries to be in our land position for the next decade of discoveries. And I believe we've given ourselves the perfect shot. We got everything we wanted, and now we're comfortable to sign CAs and let the big guys come in and take a look.
What is it going to cost to drill this project this year? And can you talk any more about the targets you have and the timeline that investors should look to this year?
Yeah, so a couple things. Right now we're in the permitting phase. We've applied for 40 drill pads, which gives you a lot more room than the typical 20 you get in an initial permit. It takes a couple more months to get this permit, but like I said, we're in process. We're well on the way. We expect it June, July of this year. You know, it can take a month or two longer. You never know, but right now we're on track. We don't see any foreseeable delays. We're going to drill 15,000 meters is our plan on our first pass. That'll cost us about $5 million Canadian to do that first pass of drilling. Not a huge cost. We don't have to worry about having money for that until we get permits later this summer. And you know, we're about to resume trenching. We've only trenched and sampled one of five major centers that could be standalone flagship, you know, company making assets. So we're about to get our trenching resuming to go in trench number two, number three, number four, number five. So by the time we're actually drilling, we will have had five major centers all sampled, ready for permitting and drilling. And so we've got our hands full. We're going to have a lot of news for the market in terms of trenching these new areas. And you kind of have to listen to the punchline. We're comparing ourselves to Las Bambas. And we're saying that this thing could be as big as Las Bambas. And we're only on the first of five major targets. So we're going to be following that up here quite shortly with trenching to show a bunch more things that could also be big discoveries like that. So perfect case from an exploration investor's perspective. You know, you're waiting for drill permits while you keep adding more huge targets to the equation.
What about your relationship with the indigenous people, and is there any infrastructure nearby?
Yeah, so a couple things there. The local communities, we took our time with them. We're under the guidance of Peruvians. Miguel Cardozo is managing them. And instead of rushing, trying to get the drill bit out, we built really strong relations. Took us about a year for the first major community agreement. And that one's been working out really well since we've done that. The second one has taken us just over 2 years, and we're just collecting signatures now. So it's in the phase of being complete. I'll say one comment about Peru and communities. This is one of the major risks that can come up for any company that's operating there. We came into Peru with a different project, and the first thing we did before we took any samples off the ground was bring in a $1 million water program to bring water and irrigation to their fields. We spent about $240,000 over 4 years, and then we brought in an NGO to come in and pick up the balance to do that. So, you know, what I heard when we first got to Peru and what we heard as a team was the people who came in the last bull market came and gave everybody money, but they left and there was no sustainability factor. Money was spent and communities were a little bit upset in some areas of Peru. So our theme as a group is action before words. So we come in there and we start doing things for the communities before we start talking and making promises and stuff like that along the lines of what we will do. And so we've covered that part incredibly well. The second part of your question was asking me about the indigenous communities and infrastructure. Mm-hmm. Since we've had the Sombrero project, you know, we like to think the government was foreshadowing the discovery because they built high tension power lines over the edge of our property. We have power for a major mine at our project. There are roads right into the project. There are two towns with about 800 people peripheral to the project, not on top of it. Nobody has to be moved, but nearby where you'd have a local workforce. We're only at 3,900 meters elevation. People mine up to 5,500 meters elevation in the Andes. And so it's reasonable in elevation. You have a road to the project. You have a power source, which generally is a major cost factor. So what you have to think about when I say all those things to answer your question, it's profitability. You know, it couldn't be a better scenario. I mean, the only thing that could improve this would be a railway. And if you go and Google Las Bambas Railway, you see there's a lot of talk about one that's nearly approved to be built from Las Bambas and all these other major nearby mines to the coast, which would be obviously a tremendous, tremendous add-on to us. It'd be perfect infrastructure from all aspects.
You had told me back in October that you plan to aggressively pursue Sombrero as well as Committee Bay, which we haven't spoken about yet. But how do you expect to fund this program?
Yeah, so we had $2 million in January last month is how we started the year. That will take us into May before we need any more money. If you listen to me or any of my colleagues on the road right now, we're not looking for money. We're going to be marketing our company to create awareness about the opportunity and sharing the trenching in the Committee Bay, which we'll talk about in a minute. But we're not looking for money because we have seven projects. Two of them, we've been very public about it, are ones we'd consider selling if we got the right prices for them. And one of them is 2 years into the negotiation. The other one's about a year and a half. So we're at very mature stages of potentially one of these two things happening before we have to say the word financing again. Conservatively, one of them would give us 1 year of drilling and working capital is what we anticipate. If we sell the other one, we might end up with a combination of about 4 years of aggressive drilling and working capital, you know, to go out there and not have to say the word financing for 4 years would truly be spectacular for us with these kind of big projects on the deck.
If you were to sell both of them in the near term, what do you think that would do to your market capitalization?
Well, you know, 90 million shares out issued and outstanding. You know, the price I would speculate we net would probably be about 70 or 80 cents per share in cash, which would give you about $40 million for two of the biggest exploration swings globally, you know, Committee Bay and Sombrero. I think there'd be a dramatic re-rate on us. And, you know, there's a value to speculation about what you might drill. We saw a market cap of $250 million twice before we went to drill Committee Bay, which we haven't even talked about yet. Now we have Sombrero online as well. Multiple projects takes away the risk. The obvious nature of the mineralization at Sombrero is going to allow people to speculate pretty aggressively. What would you pay, you know, in terms of a share price as an investor to have a seat at a table where you're taking a $60 billion swing, you know, finding a ball of metal in the ground with tons of indicators, big company signing CAs, third-party validations all over the place? What would you be wanting to pay if you might find something worth that kind of caliber of that much money? Las Bambas sold for $8 billion back in 2014, the same year we sold Caden, so middle of the bear market. I believe $6 billion was the metal content of a $60 billion, you know, dollar ball of metal in the ground. So, you know, we have 90 million shares out. We have about $100 million market cap. We're looking to raise about 60 to 70 million net of taxes from asset sales. I think you'd see much more than a double before we went drilling. That would be my speculation with the ability to drill for 3 or 4 years without saying the word financing in a rising commodity market. It would be spectacular.
And if the sales didn't go through, just theoretically, I know there's a newsletter writer that I follow, and he recommends your company just for the fact that you're able to raise money easily.
Yeah, so we've raised $600 million. As an insider in the public markets, I've bought $3.2 million of Orange shares in the last 3.5 years, as high as 370 Canadian per share, and as low as $1.15 per share Canadian. You know, my point there is not only do we have the ability to write a check into our own company, and we've obviously done that. We have a tremendous following with investors. We've made a lot of money over the years. The money we need for 1 year of drilling both projects and working capital is probably around 15 million Canadian. And we could get that this week if we wanted it. But we are extremely anti-dilutive. We are very large shareholders. We own 15% of our company. And we treat our company as investors would want to treat their own company in terms of dilution and financing. So, you know, in that case, and that equation with the ability to write our own checks into our own company, you know, gives us a tremendous opportunity here to really deliver, you know, a very robust share price return by staying away from the market from financings. If those asset sales take longer, that's the consequence, I think, not happening. They'll happen eventually. Then we would likely do a really small funding, you know, a non-brokered private placement for $5 million, which would cover trenching in Peru and G&A, so that we could wait for better metal prices to get more out of those transactions. But to be honest, look, we're sitting here in February. I'm marketing all month. We're going to PDAC. We're marketing in Europe. And everything we're doing doesn't have the word financing attached to it. It's just creating awareness on the opportunities at Sombrero and, you know, round five up at Committee Bay.
Well, I was watching your share price movement, and right after the Vancouver conferences in January, you saw a nice spike.
Yeah, that's just the crowd. We're just started talking about Sombrero. Vancouver 2 weeks ago was week one. We were just in California for a week. We're in Florida next week. We are going to go through our global network, and being around this business and as a group for about 13 years, we have a lot of investors to show how big the opportunities are at Sombrero and how mature we're getting with the potential discovery at Committee Bay, underpinned with two potential asset sales that are nearly imminent to take place. So that's what we're excited about. That's why we're going out there. And truly, out of everything I've seen in 20 years, Sombrero is number one on my list, and I'm going to tell the whole world about it, because everybody should, who's ever bought an exploration stock, should be watching the story.
Your other flagship project is Committee Bay. You've been at that project for 4 years, and you've spent $50 million on it. What can we expect in 2019 with this project?
So, great question came up to me the other day, and the question actually was, you've been there for 4 years, you spent over $50 million. I believe we've drilled over 250 holes on the project. We've taken over 400,000 till samples along a 300-kilometer long belt, which has gold shedding on one side to the other. And so that all being said, you know, that's a lot of work. Where's the deposit? You guys have the Newmont exploration team, and you know, how come you've spent all this money, you haven't found it? In the middle of the belt, there is a deposit, 1.3 million ounces of about 8 grams per ton, but the belt is covered 95% by till. The whole belt is covered by till, meaning there's 5 to 40 meters of dirt on top of the rocks, and you're up in the Arctic. So glaciers have moved over these rocks, or the dirt on the rocks. It's not easy to find these things, or we would have never been able to acquire it ourselves. The comment I got was, you know, when do you guys walk away from this project? And most certainly wouldn't do it for another 5 or 10 years, because you have 18 targets along this big belt to go test, which is going to take time. Where the guys are at now is they've brought in machine learning to process all that data on the entire belt. And one of our Newmont geologists has met up or partnered up with a technical specialist. We've had a press release about this, and it's truly amazing what they've done. And first of all, the data inputs are extremely high quality of what the way we take samples, the way we assay samples, the world experts formerly with Newmont that are inputting the data. So data in, data out is obviously a major contributor. The neural network these guys are using is the same one Google uses, as Amazon, Facebook. I don't know if you ever had the experience where you're on the website, you're looking at boats or something, or tennis rackets or whatever sport you play, or you say it even out loud now, you don't even have to go look at it, and then you get some random marketing email that shows you a bunch of product for sale that you were thinking about or talking about. So imagine that exact same neural network, which is being used by Google. Now you're putting in geoscientific data. We took Three Bluffs, the deposit. We gave it 1/3 of the high grade at Three Bluffs, and we trotted how to find that. And then we challenged it to find the other 2/3, and it came out with about a 99% accuracy, you know, finding the other 2/3. So in my opinion, it works. In about 3 weeks, the end of this month, end of February, we're going to have the results of the learning, which is going to show targets that we're going to drill this here at Committee Bay alongside targets that our geologists have found. But truly, the future of major discoveries is either hidden deposits, or it is things like Sombrero that were overlooked, or it's contentious landowners that wouldn't sell to an exploration company prior that finally sell. And I think if you listen to Barrick, Teck, and Goldcorp, and a lot of these big companies, everyone's talking about AI platforms coming into mining. And the true reason why is the computer that we're using, or the neural network, and the ability for it to process data is about 1,000 times the capacity of a human brain. So you're basically saving 20 years of crunching numbers by doing it through a computer in a period of 3 to 6 months, right? And that's the opportunity there. The last comment I'll make on Committee Bay, and this is for all the Committee Bay shareholders that have owned us, that have sold us, that have speculated with us, and that can't get enough of, you know, risking their money for Committee Bay discovery. We've only physically been on the ground at Committee Bay for about 8.5 months. And so we've drilled 250 holes. We've taken 400,000 till samples in an 8.5 month of physically being on a property. And in comparison to Sombrero, where we've been on the ground physically for about 11 months, you know, you have to take that into context of how little time we've actually spent at Committee Bay. And the reason why is we spent about 2 months at windows of exploration each summer. We're not exploring through the winter. You could, in the right, you know, environment of a discovery, you could drill year round. Agnico Eagle's doing it on this major mine they found next door called Amaruq. But, you know, for us, we've only been on the ground for about 8.5 months since we've had it. We've collected all this data, and the real discoveries are going to come out of Committee Bay, we think, this season, not only because we've learned so much about these deposits we've been going after, and we feel we're on the edge of some major discoveries, but we've brought in the computer to process all that data that I've told you that we've just collected. And, you know, it's going to be one of the most exciting drill programs that I've been part of with Committee Bay, but also to go test the computer learning, if it's right, then the whole belt opens up again. You have 300 kilometers of gold shedding off a belt. It becomes one of the phenoms in the world to go find major gold deposits and to quantify how hard these deposits are to find too. In those 4 years that we've been going up there so far, nobody else has found a 5 million ounce or better gold deposit. The last major mine in the world found that's over 5 million ounces of gold, it's Amaruq, 6 million ounces of 6 grams per ton, which was found by Agnico Eagle right next to us at that Committee Bay. Nobody has found anything since 2013 of consequence in the gold side of the business that's being explored. So, you know, we're not the only ones, but I'd like to argue we have some of the best real estate for high-grade gold in Canada, and a massive copper gold discovery in potentially in Peru.
Yeah, and it balances the portfolio. There's going to be news flow constantly in the years to come.
Yeah, so news flow is a main catalyst for all, excuse me, for all juniors. And what we're looking at for news flow here is the releasing of the AI targeting, Committee Bay targeting, as well as the resuming of trenching in Peru. Those are to be two main drivers that drive a lot of speculation towards the summer. But you might see the first asset sale in the coming weeks or month or two, and the second one might be right behind it, or they might happen both at the same time. If you see the gold price performing, expect the asset sales to happen probably a lot quicker. If the gold price goes down, they might take longer. That's the only way I would say you can wager how long these things might take. But again, we're in the very mature discussions of these asset sales, and we're confident that one or both could happen this year.
Ivan, Rick Rule always teaches speculators that they need to know at least three things that could go wrong with a gold speculative company that's pursuing a discovery. So the question posed to you as the executive chairman would be, what would keep you up at night? When you look at the company and you look at your projects, what are some things that could go wrong?
That's a really great question. And I've had the chance to meet Rick in 2003 and get to know him for the last 15, 16 years. And you know, the first question, having done a lot of this, the first answer to that question would be communities in Peru. That's the obvious one. That's the easy one. We have a really good handle on that, as I've been quite elaborate about that. And I don't think there's any serious risk there at all. But that's one of the big red flags that someone could throw out and lose a little sleep at night. Second one would be metal prices. We don't need higher metal prices than today. But if the metal prices go into a massive tailspin, then that would obviously slow us down and we would be conservative with our spend and we wouldn't get to go drill as quickly as we wanted to because we wouldn't want to dilute ourselves in that process. And thirdly, you've asked me for three. I'd have to go on to, personnel. You know, you don't want to lose any geologist, you know, to something tragic or something else. We have incredible people on our team. And I think if we lost part of our technical team somehow, that would be, you know, something we could recover and repair, but it would be the other thing. I don't want anything to happen to anybody on, you know, on a personal basis. And there's no danger in where we're working, but, you know, life is interesting enough in itself. There's airplanes, there's all kinds of things that could happen. You know, it was such a remarkable feat for us to put together this group of people as a team. It was such a remarkable feat to put together this portfolio of projects, and we don't want to lose anyone. So those are my three.
Orin trades under the ticker AUG. You can go on the website. It's spelled AURYN, resources.com. That's orinresources.com. There you can listen to Ivan's lead geologist describe in detail in about a 17-minute YouTube video why they chose the specific targets at Sombrero. It's a very easy to understand for the non-technically trained person to understand the excitement regarding this project. There you can also view the most recent presentation that is up there to see the prospective nature of also Committee Bay, not just Sombrero. Ivan, as we conclude, is there anything else you'd like to share with the listeners?
No, you know what? If you're not going to own us, you most certainly should follow us because I think we have a chance to find the world's biggest on two different projects.
Well, I appreciate the conversation. It was a pleasure meeting you in person. Ben, we'll be talking to you again throughout 2019.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to this Mining Stock Education podcast. Please subscribe and share with like-minded investors. Visit us on the web at miningstockeducation.com for more resources on precious metals and natural resource investing. At our website, you can also sign up for our free newsletter for interview transcripts, stock picks, and more. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be considered personal legal or investment advice or a recommendation to buy or sell securities or any other product. We make every effort to be accurate, but the information presented is not to be considered infallible. It may contain errors, and we offer no inferred or explicit warranty. If personal advice is needed, consult a qualified legal, tax, or investment professional. Do not base any investment decision on the information contained on miningstockeducation.com, our podcasts, or videos. Make sure you always conduct your own thorough due diligence before investing. Realize that we may hold equity positions in or be compensated by some of the companies we feature and therefore are biased and hold an obvious conflict of interest. For our full disclaimer, please visit our website.